welcome to Syngenta Growing Golf, the podcast about tomorrow's golf industry today. I'm Sarah Gwynn, your host, and today I'm talking to three brilliant female coaches who are doing great things in golf. Amy Millwood, a PGA professional from the UK who's now based in Dubai. Jamie Taylor, an LPGA professional and entrepreneur originally from Ohio, now living in Florida. And Molly Moore, another PGA professional based at Reigate Hill Golf Club in Surrey, UK. All three are passionate about achieving greater diversity in the game, and we discuss their experiences and careers so far. We also talk about what golf is doing in their respective regions to welcome more women and what female coaches might offer that perhaps their male counterparts don't. Clubs and courses everywhere can learn from what these ambitious women have to say. As always, we'd love to hear your thoughts, comments and questions. So please do join the conversation at syngentagolf.com or via LinkedIn and X. Enjoy the episode. Amy Millwood, Jamie Taylor, Molly Moore, thanks so much for joining us on the Syngenta Growing Golf podcast. And before we get stuck into your experiences as female golf coaches, let's hear a little bit about your backgrounds, how you got into golf, where you're from, and what has happened so far in your career and how you've reached your current role. Jamie, let's start with you.
Thank you, Sarah, for having me. So I'm an LPGA professional, but how I got there, started golfing at the age of 7. In Cleveland, Ohio, where I was born and raised. Started with my family at the local driving range. We were just taking lessons, doing something just to do something as a family together. I then joined a junior golf program at the age of 8 called Greater Cleveland Junior Golf Scholarship Fund that was targeted to youth, specifically youth of color. Joining that group, I was introduced to tournament golf. So I played my first tournament at the age of 9. And actually won. And so that really got me going to want to compete and play in golf. And so from there, I continued to compete every year, every summer, until I got to high school, where I went to all-girls school and started the golf team my junior year. And then once the golf team started there, I went on to get a full ride scholarship to a school called Gannon University in Erie, Pennsylvania, where I played on the women's varsity team on a full ride scholarship and got my undergrad and my master's there. And when I left, I thought, you know, I still love golf. I actually started working in golf at age 14. So I figured I'd still get, you know, work, get paid, and pursued working for several golf organizations from the first tee to managing golf courses. And in that time, I got my LPGA certification. And then from in 2015, I left the golf courses in Cleveland and came down to Florida, where I currently live, to work for the LPGA. Headquarters. I was their event manager and oversaw a lot of events there for them, and then decided to go out on my own in 2020, where I started two businesses, my JT Mobile training consulting business, as well as the Black Golf Directory, which is a platform to help promote African Americans in the golf space. So that's my quick and short journey of golf.
Thanks, Jamie. That's great. Molly, how about you?
I sort of started when I was 8 years old, so from Cheshire in Northwest England, and my family traditionally came from a horse background, so we used to do a lot of showing and things like that. But unfortunately, when I was 8, I broke my arm after a couple of nasty falls, and since then it was kind of not for me, so I just turned my hand to golf. It was a really strange one because none of my family played apart from my granddad, and it was just one of those, like, Dad, I'd like to start, and of course, he wasn't going to stop me, so... From then on, we just sort of got some lessons at a golf club called Hawkstone Park in Shropshire. And it was from then I just sort of, it clicked with me. I mean, growing up, apart from horses, sports didn't really come as naturally to me maybe as others. I was strong, I was fit, but sports, I could never find that real one that clicked for me. And golf became that one, really. So just had that traditional golf journey of lessons. Luckily, I went straight into a group of girls. So I never really felt alone. Went through counter training, things like that. And then eventually when I went to university, I went to the University of Birmingham to study applied golf management studies. And it was here I sort of developed my passion for coaching. I did placements over in Spain at Finca Cortesín with the Solheim Cup's just been held, which is amazing. But it was there I actually decided, you know, coaching's the way I want to go. So I moved to Reigate Hill in Surrey in 2020. And I haven't really looked back then since, because I started a separate side to my business called Girls Golf Excellence. That's about elevating and promoting girls' golf, not just in terms of a grassroots level, but also those girls who want to achieve dreams at a professional level is actually providing a platform for them to get there. So I think we're doing a great job at the grassroots stuff. But what my desire with that is to help girls get to where they want to believe their dreams, really.
Was there anything in particular that made you choose golf? You said that it was golf and never any other sport. Was there one thing, or was it your granddad encouraging you?
Not necessarily. So, and honestly, I don't know why I chose it. It's the craziest thing in the world, because no one had said, do I want to try it? I mean, I saw it on TV a couple of times, but never actually thought, oh, I'm not quite to do that. And then my dad was traveling away over my birthday, and he said, what would you like for your birthday? I was like, quite like a set of golf clubs. Okay, off you go then. So it was really random, and I sort of grew up never really having a family that went and played golf. It was kind of just me, and so I thought it was quite unusual. I still now couldn't tell you what actually made me choose that decision, but I'm glad I did.
Good stuff. And how about you, Amy?
So I was very similar in age. Started when I was about six at a golf club called Wharton Park in Worcestershire. And then kind of played throughout my early childhood into kind of teenage years, kind of same as Molly, county level, just any competitions I could. Realised that it was a job that I wanted to do, like I loved kind of seeing people improve, and I thought, oh, okay, I love playing golf, can I put those two together? So I was actually having a golf lesson one day with my coach at the time, and he was like, oh, the local golf course that is really close to my hometown in Clibbury Mortimer, which is in South Shropshire. They're looking for someone to come and join the team. So he was like, head across, I put in a good word, and ended up pretty much starting that weekend. I worked there for 5 years before I moved to the United Arab Emirates in Dubai. Prior to getting the job at the Claude Harmon Golf Academy, I actually interned here twice. So I did a month in January 2018 and a month in January 2019. Where I kind of just helped at the academy, shadowed all the lessons, learned a lot from kind of some amazing coaches, and was like, okay, this is where I want to go next. And then kind of got offered a job in September 2019, and I've been here ever since. So my main job is kind of individual coaching, but also the ladies, kind of pushing the ladies program and all that side of thing. So we run two different types of programs and have quite a lot of ladies. So we probably see nearly across, I'd say, 200 ladies a week. So we're quite lucky in that aspect.
A fairly eye-opening statistic is that only 7% of golf coaches globally are female. So I wanted to ask you about your experiences in a very male-dominated industry. Molly, you've recently made a short film about your experiences as a female and being quite outnumbered. How would you sum up your career so far?
I love my job, so I've really enjoyed my journey so far. As I've moved down south, I've met more people in a similar role to me, so more female coaches. And the biggest thing I've kind of learned is to learn from them as well. I think something you can easily fall in the trap of is almost using your gender as like your unique selling point. So, well, I'm a female coach, like you can't be a female coach. Whereas we should be kind of uniting together on that front as, no, come on, let's support each other. And I actually love to learn off what other women do, and giving me confidence to try other things myself. But also relying on the team you've got around you in your workplace as well. So generally, I think it's brave enough to reach out and get advice off other female professionals. But also, if we want to increase the number at the top level, is we need to have the feeder system going into it. So like I've recently heard in rugby, how they're not getting as many young kids going to the sport, and they're worried about the national levels. I mean, it applies the same in golf, really. We have to have the representation at the bottom levels to feed up to the top levels.
Absolutely. Jamie, how about you?
My experience has been, I can say honestly, has been good for the most part as a woman in the industry, just as a player. You always have that experience, I think, for all women, where you go to the golf course, let's say you're not by yourself or maybe with another woman, and you get paired up with some guys and they're looking like, oh no, like I got to be paired up with these women. I often don't play from the front forward tees. I'll play from the middle tees. And so then that conversation takes place of like, oh, the ladies tees are up there. And I'm just like, I don't really say much. I just kind of hit the ball. And then all of a sudden you have that epiphany moment of like, oh, she actually looks like she might know what she's doing. And then we have a dialogue for the next 9 or 18 holes about what I do and how I got in the game. And my hope is that it helps kind of break down some of their stereotypes about women in golf, and hopefully not be that way with the next woman that they play with, or assume that we're all lesser of player than they are. The other thing from the work side of golf, you know, I have a unisex name. And so oftentimes people send me emails, you know, Mr. Jamie Taylor, or they expect me to be a man when they call. But the best part is when I was managing golf courses, you know, if someone, you know, wants to talk to the manager and then I come from behind the door, they never anticipate this little woman walking behind the door and watching their demeanor change before my eyes because they know they don't want to yell at me the way that they probably were going to yell if it was a man. I kind of laugh within because it's always just fun to see that change. I'm hoping that, you know, that will help change some of the stereotypes, just being there, being present. But the statistic that really was substantial to me that I recently learned is I'm only one of 18 Class A LPGA professional, Black Class A LPGA professional women historically. And I didn't know that number until maybe a year ago. And that shocked me only because I grew up playing with a lot of Black women who play at a high level. And I just thought it was odd that so few of us pursue a career or a profession in golf. And so I've made it my kind of mission in life to help encourage and educate a lot more Black women and youth to see golf as an opportunity that they can consider, because if you don't see it, you won't do it. And so that's kind of what I try to do in my work every day.
That's so true. Let's talk about women as coaches and what they bring to the table and the qualities that you have that your male colleagues might not. What do you think you bring, Molly?
It's a tough one. So I think it's that understanding of basically how women might work in terms of the women's golf side of thing. If a man was to book a lesson, like, okay, I'll see you there. Whereas if a woman was to book a lesson, what time, what do we need to wear, what do we need to bring, is this okay? So it's having that understanding that, like, when you come into a new sport. Now, I'm not saying that's what male coaches don't do, but I'm just saying as a woman, I feel like we have that advantage. In terms of what I've tried to describe, when someone says, well, what's the difference between booking a lesson with you and one of the men? I'm like, well, there's not much difference. It's like, we look a bit different. And that's all there is to it. But certainly I feel like I've done quite well with the under 18 market in terms of coaching there. And trying to be a good role model, like a realistic role model to girls wanting to achieve not just like professional golf playing, but a role in the industry. So being able to be a realistic model of someone who's gone through the levels, they've worked to get there, gone the practical sort of education route rather than just sort of shot to fame and things like that. It's a realistic goal for girls to achieve, I find.
I definitely agree with Molly with some of that. Like, whenever there's a new session starting, I'll pretty much like label like, okay, this is the time, this is where you need to go, this is what you're going to do. Just to make sure that they're fully sure. And I'm always like, reiterate, like, if there's any questions, however silly, ask, because at some point you're going to need to know the answer to that. So don't ever be afraid to ask the silly questions, because they're probably some of the most important ones. I think sometimes females are just a little bit more patient. If they're not getting it, it's totally fine. It doesn't matter from a coach's perspective. You'll get it eventually. And everyone learns at different paces. So there'll be like certain weeks that some people just don't get it. And you're like, that's okay. It's like, okay, come back next week. We'll try it in a different way. Say it differently. Try it differently. And then it clicks.
Jamie, do you find you alter your approaches to coaching depending on whether you've got, say, a woman, a man, a child?
I don't alter it much. I mean, I probably, I've toned down some of my colorful displays with some of the adults just because I don't want them to feel like it's too kiddie. But at the same time, sometimes they enjoy the visuals if they're a visual person. I just did a clinic with women last night, actually. And one of the things that I know is easier for women to talk about is obviously there are some anatomy things that come into play. And it's easier for me to address that without having that awkwardness of, you know, how do I say this without coming off offensive? And to Amy's point earlier about the questions, you know, a lot of women, I know they come into a lesson or to a clinic like the one I did yesterday, and they think they have to be like good. Like they tell me, you know, don't laugh at me, or, you know, I suck at this, I'm not good at this. And they're all apologizing. And I was like, this is why you're here. You're here for me to help you. You're here because I'm supposed to be the one to help you learn this. And so I think that's also something that we as women can relate to those women, because we all want to be perfect and we all want to be good at what we're doing, and we don't want to embarrass ourselves. When women work with women, they feel more at ease, or at least we know how to put them at ease. So I think that would be the difference.
Let's talk about mentors that you might have had in your career. Have you had any good mentors, male or female, who've helped you along? And how important is mentorship, particularly for female young pros coming through?
I was very lucky. When I moved down to Reigate, I'm the only female coach there. But I was very lucky to just be welcomed regardless. I mean, the team, they're brilliant. So my main two mentors were Hugh Marr and Sam Truman. They were there when I arrived, and then my other colleague, Simon Kidd. And they were just, they didn't see me as a female coach. They just saw me as a coach. And I think the important thing was for me, I didn't want to be, when someone goes, oh, you're a female, so you must coach women and juniors. I'm like, well, but I can do more than that. And that was my main sort of worry when I started coaching. But they just saw me as a coach coaching people rather than any labels and things like that. So I was really grateful. And in turn, it's then actually led me down the path of actually, I want to coach women and girls rather than feeling actually this is the road that you should be going down because you're a woman. So I'm very grateful for that. And just being able to have someone as a sounding board has been really important. On all matters, really, and this sort of problem has arisen that they've never thought of as well because they've not had a woman around as well. So I think it's important in your workplace to be open and honest with colleagues and employers.
Yeah, I was going to say, my actual first mentor was a man, and I think it was partly due to just the fact that there were only men around at the golf course, but he was an awesome mentor, Jeff Staker, PGA professional. He was the man, you know, the head professional at the golf course where I was learning and was my first instructor. And he was the one that introduced me to the clubhouse side of golf. You know, he said, when you turn 16, you have the opportunity to work here, and mainly just to get us access to free golf so we could practice. But also while doing that, I learned all the business side of golf in regards to doing the cashier, being a ranger, being a starter. He would let me help with the golf clinics. So I learned how to teach golf clinics and group lessons and set up and clean up. And he was very meticulous. And so he was my first real mentor, but then my first female mentor that I felt like I had access to was when I became an LPGA professional. You know, at that point, I had a whole network of women that I could talk to, and I met Onita Castillo, who is an African-American LPGA professional. And I didn't know, I grew up playing junior golf with her daughter, but you know, when you're kids, that's such and so's mom, so you don't know their actual name. But when I met her in my training, I resonated because she was a Black woman. And I thought, oh, there's another woman here. And then two, I asked her, I said, could you be my mentor? Because I thought if anyone knows what it's like to go through this journey and be in this industry, she would know. And so she did agree to that. And pretty much everything I've made a decision in my career, as far as pivoting in different directions, I always pick up the phone and call her and get her input because it does mean that much to me. And she's, you know, just ensures me and encourages me that I am good enough and able to do the things that I seek to do. So having that mentor has been very crucial for me.
I would say I've been really lucky with mentors, especially my boss now, Jamie McConnell, who's just been supportive through, like, whenever I doubt myself. I think that's the biggest thing I've always encountered as a female, is that you actually just doubt, are you doing the right thing? Am I doing a good enough job? Am I growing the game enough? And he's always like, whenever I'm having one of those moments, he'll be like, no, you know you are. And then last year I did the RNA Women Golf Foundation program. So I had a lady mentor then called Hannah. We did like kind of monthly meetings and just went through what I could learn from her a little bit, which was great to have someone that's in the golf industry, but also in a very different area of the game, not as a coach, which was nice to kind of balance out and see kind of different perspectives, I guess, from kind of more of a tournament side versus a coaching side, which was really, really good.
Those male allies are almost as important as the female mentors as well. I would 100% agree with that. What about your goals? And have they changed from when you first came into the industry and over the years?
Definitely they've changed. So when I first turned professional and started coaching, I wanted to work on the European Tour. I wanted to coach the pros, and that was always the dream, really. And then as I started to gain more experience and learn more about the industry, I kind of sort of switched, and I was like, there's not much support out for the group that I target now, so under 18 girls. I mean, in terms of competition-wise and opportunity-wise, I just didn't feel there was the support. So then it completely shifted in the last 12 to 18 months, I'd say. So my main goal for 2023 was to get 6 girls on the Girls Golf Excellence Programme. And now I'm working towards, I've got about 12 to 15 competitive girls, so I've surpassed that. And what I'm looking towards now is a scalable academy that can go across the UK. And within 10 years' time, I'd like 3 centres across the UK dedicated to girls' golf development, using the sort of model that I teach off, which is slightly more a psychological model rather than just traditional swing coaching. So like Jamie touched on earlier, like anatomy features is a big thing. As a girl gets older, she's going to go through a lot of different changes than a boy might. And understanding that and how it might impact their golf, I think, is a real key thing to highlight for them, and just different societal pressures too. So if we could create an academy nationwide, globally, I don't know, how far could it go, that understands these pressures, then I think you'll start to see some real big shifts, not only just grassroots golf, professional golf, and hopefully all the way through the levels. So they're my real goals for my career.
My initial goal when I started out, you know, at the age of 9, winning a tournament was to be a tour professional, right? I learned through, definitely through college, that that was not going to be my path. My game was good, but not good enough. And not in a, and I just didn't have the drive to practice and do the things that it would take to even get it to that level. But I did have a passion for teaching. And I started doing that at age 12, kind of assisting the coaches, and then just did some summer work, like I said, with my pro and things of that nature. And so watching the mentor that I'd mentioned earlier that managed a golf course, it gave me the idea of managing a golf course, which of course I had never seen anyone look like me do that before. But I thought that would be the ultimate goal. And I thought I'd had to be, because this guy was a white haired man. So I thought I had to, you know, get old to do that. Well, fortunately, from turn of events, I think I got my first what we call clubhouse manager position. I was in my mid early 20s. And I did that for 7 years. And so that was the goal. That was the like mountaintop thing for me. So having accomplished that at such a young age, I was like, okay, there's got to be more to this. I don't want to just do this. But I had no understanding of anything else that goes on outside of playing and teaching and working at a golf course. So when I went to LPGA in 2015, I went there with the intentions of learning about the industry from a corporate standpoint. And I'm glad I did it, because I did learn not just what goes on corporate level, but I learned what people like you're doing, Sarah. There's people doing podcasts, and there's people writing, and there's people doing events. And I just thought, like, I never thought these are things you could do and get paid to do. Even though you go to these events, I never thought someone's paid to make this happen, right? And so because of learning all these things, that's what led me to what I do now with the Black Golf Directory, and doing my virtual career fairs and something like this, where I can educate people, especially in my community, about other opportunities in the golf space that aren't traditionally working at a golf course, playing on the tour. And, you know, I also have a passion for girls, because I want to see more of us in the industry. So I do as much as I can through my golf academies, through the Black Golf Director Golf Academies, to incorporate not just the golf component, like we don't do just traditional golf. I have people come in, we do a careers piece and internship opportunities and the mental side of golf and the physical side of golf, and bring in people from all aspects. So these girls know that when they get to the point of deciding what they're going to do in life, they can know that they can incorporate golf into that in some form or fashion. So that's definitely now my goal, is to make sure I get as many girls and people impacted with that information.
I would say I'm probably different. I feel like I've always had the goal to like grow and help people get into the game. I think from an early age I like enjoyed helping with some of the coaching sessions and kind of just being a little bit of an assistant to some of the coaches and trying to get more girls to play. Like the golf club I was at when I was younger, I was the only under 18 girl. I think the nearest person to me in age was probably like 25 years older than me. So I think that was a big push to actually go, okay, I actually want to get more girls into golf. I've met people I would never meet and have friends for life from playing this game that if I didn't, I wouldn't meet them. So I think I've just tried to push that more and more. I think I've probably gone more down the way of trying to get like ladies playing golf. I think there's a massive gap when you finish school to kind of like 35 maybe, where there's not many of us in that age category playing golf anymore because of careers, becoming mums, that kind of thing. So you lose that time that you can dedicate to playing. And we've seen a big influx of like teachers over here play the game, which is amazing, because that's the age that I was like, I feel like has lost the majority of females playing. They come back to it later, but it's kind of like we have some in that kind of under 18 category, and as soon as you hit kind of 18 to maybe 35, or priorities change a little bit, you kind of go to university, get a job, become parents, that kind of thing. So I think for me, it's always been, okay, can I get more people like one, staying in the game, and two, just constantly getting them to play the game, really. So that's been the biggest thing for me, is I've always wanted to teach and just trying to stay true to that the whole time, really.
That's really, really valid points there, Amy, that you raise about the age groups and different pressures at different times in your life. What can golf do better where you are to attract and retain women in golf? We've got Dubai, UK and US here. Or is it doing enough?
I think there could always be more, couldn't there? However good a job, like, you reach kind of a target and then you're like, okay, then you break that next target. So there's always goals and markers to reach. But I think it's just making it, like, I live in kind of a country where kind of there isn't like your most affordable golf courses. So golf's probably more kind of pushed towards, especially playing golf is pushed towards those that can more afford it. Like, classes and lessons can be affordable, but I think actually getting out on the golf course, especially with how busy it gets in peak season, makes it kind of harder. I think especially as we've covered, like, that pressure of like how long a round takes and women being kind of classed as slow when that isn't the case. I think there's always that fear to actually get out on the golf course. So I think actually making kind of on course more accessible would probably be the big thing for me that I think I'd like to see change. I think where it is now with kind of coaching, I think there's good offerings out there that are kind of affordable and set to times that everyone can make, whether that's morning, afternoon, evening, weekends. I think getting on the course and actually playing the game that we all play, at the end of the day, it is a game that we play, not practice, however much that helps. I think that's the most important part for me, really, is more, if course access became easier, I think that would be a big step in the right direction.
What about down in Surrey, Molly?
Well, I don't want to be like a party pooper on it, but I do feel we've got such a long way to go still. I mean, when you hear that statistic of 7% of global coaches are female, it's like, well, that's not progress, is it? So I feel it's about, this word accessibility gets buzzed around quite a lot, and making it accessible. And it's kind of, well, what is that? And so recently in the summer, I started boxing, and all I had to do was Google women's boxing class and find it. So that ease needs to take place in golf as well. And it's in terms of what you define participation. So for me, I didn't want to get in a ring and fight. I wanted to get fit and just do something different. And that's probably what another woman wants to do with golf. It doesn't mean they want to get handicapped and they want to go play competition, then they want to join a golf club. If they want to go to a driving range with a group of girls, a group of women, and go there every Thursday night for a lesson or for a drink and have 30 balls, that's what their participation can be. I think we get quite hung up on the figures of memberships and competitions and Stableford's, and it's like there's is too much jargon really for the masses. And in terms of marketing, I feel we fall into the trap of marketing to golfers, and we don't need to market to golfers. We need to market to normal people. And I'm guilty of it as well. I hold my hands up. I create posters and it's got someone doing an amazing swing. I'm like, but that's not going to, if I saw someone, that's not going to attract me. So it's, you've got to be clever with the marketing and target it to real people who don't play golf. So I try and get a little bit of input from non-golfers now. What do you think of this logo? What do you think of that poster? Because if they don't get it, then no one else is going to get it, but the golfing world might get it, but that's not going to improve participation. So it's definitely, I try and look from the non-golfers' perspective. So, for example, creating videos of arrival. So at Reigate in Surrey, we have a long driveway and the car park, you can easily miss it. So I try to create a where to find us video and things like that, because then it's easy. It's not one of those things, oh, I'm late, I've missed the golf club, things like that. And that's why I enjoy working for Love Golf, because they target those who don't already play. So I think there's a few things we have to do. I mean, England Golf are helping us, the women on par and things like that, but there's still a lot we need to do. And affordability as well, I think, is really important, because when I'm sort of working with juniors and women, they're like, well, how much is this set of golf clubs going to cost me? And it's like, well, and you sort of feel a bit nervous to tell them, because then you know that might put them off, and then clothing wise and things like that. So affordability and visibility, I'd say, rather than accessibility.
How about in the States, Jamie?
I think Molly hit it on the head. I would use the word intentional, be more intentional, because I know here there's definitely a lot of conversations about growing the game, and there's a lot of pats on the backs, like we've grown the women's, you know, numbers from here to here. But ultimately, having been, like I said, doing clinics and events there's no like pathway. So you get the women to the golf course, and a lot of golf courses here, I think, at least ones I've worked with so far, have been very accommodating. Like if I want to do a clinic or some type of event, they'll say, okay, we'll give you the course for, you know, the range area for free, and you just pay for food, and try to make it very easy to host these women events. But then there's no like next step at that facility. Like, okay, they showed up, they're here. Is there some marketing materials to say like, here, if you want to come back, here's what you can do. We have other classes, we have other programs, or whatever the case. Because I may not be the pro at the facility. There's no, I would say even on the side of lessons or things of that nature, just kind of creating some pathway of you're getting the lessons. Now the next step is to start playing, maybe have a league or some group for them to join. Cause most of these women are coming without a friend or without people that also play the game. So just being very intentional of like guiding them through the pathway. And even in the working side of it, right? The career piece, you don't see a lot of intent. I was fortunate, as I told my story, that the head pro reached out to me and the junior golf program that was hosted at his site and said to not just me, but all of us, like, hey, when you get 16, come to me, you can get a job here. And not only did he offer us the opportunity to make money and get free golf, but he also exposed me to teaching golf clinics and all aspects of the golf, running a golf course. And so if people want to get more women in the game, whether that's working at their golf facilities or playing, they have to be intentional about where do they want these women to be? Like, do they want them just to show up, or do they want them to, you know, eventually be managing? You know, what pathways can they make available for them to get there?
Okay, final question. What kind of legacy would you like to leave in golf? When you get to the end of your career, what do you want to have achieved?
I just want to leave behind that, know that I've had an influence on the game, whether that's introducing a certain amount of people to the game, just getting people to go, you know what, she was the reason I played this game and I've stayed in this game. I think that's what we're all kind of wanting to do, is just get ladies to play the game that we've loved for our entire lives and have probably been lucky to have a way into it. I think sometimes people don't have it or feel like there isn't an easy way into golf. But I think the one thing I notice whenever you've got a couple come and try golf for the first time, they're like, okay, I'm so glad I did that. I love that. But it's getting over that barrier to begin with and hoping that one day there'll be, I guess, less barriers to get them into golf. And hopefully I will have helped to do that.
And similar to Amy, I want to be able to really change how golf looks. I mean, I know now there's efforts being made, but just from in a real way, impactful way, be it on the career side and the playing side. But for me, career side is actually probably more impactful, because if you have more representation in these corporate spaces and, you know, people having their own businesses, I think then that will introduce more people to the game and make them pursue whatever path they choose. But I do want to know that there are people that either watched me in a podcast or came to my website or saw me in an event and something I might have said or something I gave them a thought that they never thought of before. Like, wow, I could be a general manager, even though I don't have an LPGA certification. I had that conversation with somebody, you know, that was like, or I just had an epiphany with a girl the other day about writing her resume for a golf job. And I said, don't write down everything you've ever done in your life. Write down specifically the jobs that pertain to what you're trying to do. And she was like mind blown. And I just have those conversations that will hopefully open up the fence, the gates for them to say, okay, I can do these jobs and I can apply and I'm qualified enough. It took me a long time to acknowledge the fact that I had started working in the golf industry since I was 14. Everybody starts their golf or work life when they're 18 and older. But I've been working in the industry since 14. I caddied. So people look at me and say, you only look this age. And you think, well, I probably have worked as long as you. I know as much as you. And that's what I try to educate people. Like, don't shortchange yourself. And that's what I want people to think of when they think of me, that I gave them that thought.
For me, well, I would love to be seen as a real trailblazer in the women and girls golf community. I mean, I'm so passionate about developing this game. And of course, it's a natural human instinct to want that recognition and feel like you've made a difference. So for me, definitely in the legacy I leave behind is someone who transformed the girls' golf world and made it easier for girls to play and reach the level they want to. And also for me, it's really important to be that realistic role model because you see so many people through social media. Some of it looks unattainable, and I just always want to be that realistic role model for girls. Like, they see my journey, they've seen where I've been, they see my troubles, and they aspire to hopefully generate their own story as well. I mean, I remember being in university and you'd have the alumni come in and they'd talk you through what they've done. Like, oh, I want to do something like that. And I find it so surreal now that I'm doing it and that I've started to build a story to tell. So it's making sure that other people have that story to tell as well and inspiring them to make sure that they know they will get that story and give them an opportunity to be able to live that story.
That's brilliant. Thanks, Molly. Amy, Jamie, Molly, thanks so much for joining us on the Syngenta Growing Golf podcast. It's been fascinating to hear from you and we wish you all the best.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much.
A huge thank you to Amy, Molly and Jamie for their insights and ideas around women in golf. It's been really fascinating to listen and uplifting to hear about the positive experiences they've had and the strong support they've received from people in the industry, particularly their male colleagues. For more inspiring stories about people doing great things in golf, head to syngentagolf.com, where you can also sign up for our monthly newsletter.